are going to be studying metabolism in the last section of the course. So basically these are metabolic pathways for the synthesis of the purines and the pyrimidines. And so I've listed on the board the enzymes from the pathways, which are important that you recognize them as enzymes, know what their substrate is, what their product is, and any characteristics of the enzymes, if there are any. And we'll emphasize those as we go by them, if there's anything interesting. Also, in purines, there's two disease states, gout and Lesch-Nyhan syndrome, that you should be aware of. And then finally, in pyrimidines, there is a number of chemotherapeutic drugs, and we're going to talk about three of them, in particular 5-fluorouracil, methotrexate, and deoxycoformycin. So we're going to look at those. So those are keys, again, from today's lecture that you want to emphasize. So we did kind of an introduction to purines and pyrimidines, and of course the key or the basis is the five bases. And we're going to start with the purines, which actually are structurally a little more complex, adenine and guanine. And in your notes, again, is a review of ribonucleoside versus ribonucleotide. And again, we have examples of a ribonucleoside and a ribonucleotide and a deoxyribonucleotide. And remember, we're concerning ourselves with ribonucleotides because they consist of the base, the ribose sugar, and the phosphate. And the phosphate's key in the backbone of DNA and RNA. So where we are right now is we want to look briefly at the biosynthesis and then probably more importantly the recycling, the metabolism and recycling of nucleotides, how that goes in the body, and then again a few disease states that are of interest. So purines are biosynthesized starting with ribose 5-phosphate, and you notice in your notes that that comes from the pentose pathway, also known as the pentose phosphate pathway, or PPP. We will study that pathway, and one of the main purposes of that pathway is to produce ribose 5-phosphate that goes into making purines and pyrimidines. We will also see in that pathway an important aspect of the pathway is the production of NADPH, but that pathway gives us the ribose 5-phosphate. In the first step, we get a compound which is labeled or abbreviated, or the acronym is PRPP, and that's 5-phosphoribosyl-1-pyrophosphate. And you'll notice in the first step is one of the enzymes on our list is the PRPP synthetase. So that starts off the pathway and gives us the first intermediate in our synthesis or biosynthesis of purines. Notice also we've used energy. So this enzyme requires an ATP. The first step of the pathway, we use a little bit of energy to get to PRPP. The second step of the pathway, we need an amino acid that's familiar to us now, which is glutamine. So glutamine is kind of, as we would think of it, like a cofactor, something we need to get the next product in the pathway, which is 5-ribosylamine. Again, this enzyme is important, PRPP amidotransferase. Then from 5-phosphoribosylamine, there's a whole lot of steps there, overly important. Notice we need some glycine. We're also going to talk about formal tetrahydrofolate, or THF, later in the lecture. More glutamine, aspartate. So we need a number of amino acids as we move on in our synthesis of the purine ribonucleotides. Notice then at the end of the pathway, what we get out is ADP and GMP. So we get adenine monophosphate and guanine monophosphate. So we get nucleotides, the purine nucleotides, out at the end of the pathway, which is good because obviously the purpose of the pathway was to synthesize the two nucleotides, adenine and guanine, with the ribose sugar ring and the phosphate group. And of course those then will go into making DNA and RNA. So as you look down your notes here, those numbers correspond to the numbers in your pathway, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Those are the enzymes. Again, the first enzyme kind of starts the pathway off, the PRPP, is catalyzed by the synthetase. And again, the ribose 5-phosphate, the sugar, is coming from the pentose phosphate pathway to start us off. The second enzyme, the PRPP aminotransferase, is primarily important because this is the first committed and, more importantly, regulated step of the pathway. It's the regulated step in the pathway. And as we go through all of the carbohydrate metabolic pathways, we're always going to emphasize the one step that regulates the entire pathway. And for this pathway, it's the second step, and the particular enzyme is PRPP aminotransferase. Note, it says here that glutamine, which we saw, is something that we need at this step in the pathway as we go from PRPP to 5-phosphoribosylamine, is what is providing the nitrogen to initiate the purine synthesis. So that's our nitrogen source, if you will. So the ribose 5-phosphate, the sugar source is from the pentose phosphate pathway, the nitrogen source is from glutamine. Glutamine. So that, again, yeah. That's the rate determining, rate limiting, regulated step. Step two, rate determining step, determines the rate for the pathway. Again, we will see always one reaction in every pathway that does this. How is regulation achieved in purine biosynthesis? Again, we know because we just said that the enzyme that's going to be regulated is the PRPP aminotransferase. And this type of regulation is one of the types that we saw in our list of different types of enzyme regulations that we went through. And it's one of the actually rarer cases of regulation in which we have a monomer versus a polymer. So the enzyme PRPP aminotransferase exists when it's active as a monomer and inactive when it's a polymer. So again, that was one of the types of regulation we saw. Did we see that? I think we did. If we didn't, there's a reference here to the Introduction to Metabolism lecture, which will be coming up soon, and you can see this type of regulation there as well. I think we repeat them, but I'm not remembering now. So PRPP itself causes that shift from the polymer to the monomer. And that makes sense because PRPP is the substrate for the enzyme. Okay? So in a sense, we also have substrate regulation going on. In other words, when we have a lot of substrate around, we want this enzyme to be active so that we can use it and synthesize ribonucleotides, and in particular ADP and GMP. AMP is a competitive inhibitor. You remember competitive inhibitors is something that binds or competes directly for the active site. It's a competitive inhibitor of another enzyme in the pathway, adenylosuccinate synthetase. GMP itself, so the product of the pathway, also competitively inhibits the IMP dehydrogenase. And so those are two other forms of regulation that we see, but the key regulatory step in the pathway is the PRPP aminotransferase, which again goes through a kind of monomer-polymer type of regulation, which is not a terribly common type of regulation. Now, how are these things degraded? So if we get too much, and not so much if we get too much, but we want to break down the backbone, break down DNA, RNA, recycle it, what do we do with the nucleotides? And more importantly than degradation is we can salvage a lot of the nucleotides so we don't have to go all the way back and remake them. And so they basically remain in pools to be used for further DNA and RNA synthesis. And again, this is actually quite a complicated picture of what happens. The main points, again, is what we want to emphasize, is that the guanine and the adenine nucleotides can be degraded, and there's a number of steps that they go through, nucleotidases and other enzymes there. And you see them in your picture as 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, some oxidases. And the key, though, is that the guanine nucleotides and adenine nucleotides end up as uric acid when they are degraded. They end up as uric acid. And those of you who have heard of gout or have a family member who has experienced gout know that that's one of the problems with gout. And so when we talk about gout in a minute, we're going to need to remember and refer back to our picture that, in fact, when the guanine and adenine nucleotides are degraded, we end up with the product, which is uric acid. Now, almost more importantly is the salvage of the nucleotides. So So how can we take guanine and hypoxanthine, which you see in your pathway, and recycle and end up again with GMP and AMP? How can we do that? There's a special enzyme called HGPRT, which again is one of the enzymes in our pathway. HGPRT, it's enzyme number 12 in your pathway. And basically we are reconverting the nucleoside to the nucleotide. That's one way we can recycle, and also the free base. So in other words, the guanine and something called hypoxanthine, which is a base fairly similar in structure to adenine, so kind of a precursor to AMP, can be recycled directly with this enzyme called HGPRT. And this salvage pathway is incredibly important in purine synthesis, because we salvage a lot of purines from the bases so that the body doesn't have to go all the way back through the biosynthetic pathway and make them, starting with ribose 5-phosphate and glutamine as the nitrogen source. We're going to talk about Lesch-Nyhan syndrome, and HGPRT is going to become more important when we see that, because consequences of a deficiency here lead to really rather severe clinical problems and disease. So clinically, again, what's interesting about the purine is gout. And gout is associated with one of two things, both having to do with uric acid. One is either increased uric acid formation, so in other words, increased degradation of the purine, or decreased renal excretion of uric acid. Because the next step for uric acid in a normal, healthy person should be urine excretion or excretion via urine. So, if one of these problems exists, in other words, we have increased formation, so we're degrading too many of our purines, or we have something wrong and we're not excreting uric acid properly, we can end up with gout. It's fairly common. It doesn't look it by the number, but 0.3% of the population. It gives you what feels like a really painful arthritis in the joints, and for some reason it particularly usually picks the big toe, the joint in the big toe, which is really kind of weird. But for some reason uric acid builds up there, and there's a couple types of gout. One is called primary, and the other is called secondary. And primary is basically an inherited condition, and the secondary is brought on by some other condition. One example being an individual with leukemia sometimes have a propensity or develop gout more often than others. Individuals that have a glucose 6-phosphatase, that's an enzyme we will see. It converts glucose 6-phosphate into glucose. If you have a problem with that, you have what's called glycogen storage disease. So you have problems with storing glycogen, and you end up with low blood sugar, which we all know is hypoglycemia. That causes accumulation of lactic acid and ketones, and that basically affects the kidneys, and by affecting the kidneys, then we affect the ability to excrete uric acid. So that's one way that we can have a problem, why the kidneys are not excreting uric acid properly. Why is it not coming out in the urine? Why is it building up? It can be traced all the way back to a problem with glycogen storage, where we can't store glucose properly and therefore end up with hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. Some people have an autosomal dominant, so a genetic problem, variant of glutathione reductase. And glutathione reductase is an enzyme having to do with glutathione and keeping glutathione in a reduced state. We're going to talk about that with the pentose phosphate pathway. And when we affect the pentose phosphate pathway, we get overproduction of ribose 5-phosphate. And remember, ribose 5-phosphate is the very first substrate that we need that goes into the pathway in synthesizing purines. So if we have too much ribose 5-phosphate, we're going to get too much PRPP, because it's going to keep the first enzyme in the pathway, the PRPP synthetase, overly active. It's going to have too much substrate. And once we get too much PRPP, of course, we're going to have excess synthesis of the nucleotides, particularly the adenine and guanine, AMP, GMP nucleotides, which of course will lead to too much degradation, hence buildup of uric acid. There is a drug that pretty effectively inhibits the formation of uric acid called allopurinol. It's a competitive inhibitor of xanthine oxidase. If you take that, and instead of building up uric acid, you will actually excrete hypoxanthine and xanthine, and that will relieve symptoms, usually treat gout, again, fairly effectively. And gout is not really overly particularly dangerous, but clinically can be debilitating. Lesch-Nyhan syndrome is a tremendous overproduction of uric acid. So again, uric acid. The defect, though, in the Lesch-Nyhan disease or Lesch-Nyhan syndrome is a specific gene that codes for the enzyme HGPRT. And people with Lesch-Nyhan have virtually or totally incomplete production of HGPRT. So there's no activity at all. It's X-linked recessive, limited to males. Very early age, we begin to see this characterized by extremely aggressive behavior, generally leads to things like self-mutilation. Initially, when the pathways were discovered, HGPRT wasn't considered, you know, any